Welcome. You're listening to Body and Mind, a podcast for a caring approach. I'm your host, Beverly Jones, and today I'm interviewing Dr. Carlos Durana, the founder of A Caring Approach. Dr. Durana is a clinical psychologist and counselor with over 25 years of experience in couples and individual counseling, practicing in Bethesda, Reston, and Washington, D.C. In this episode, we'll talk about an emotion we've all had to deal with at one point or another in our lives. It's the emotion of shame, and Dr. Durana is here to discuss where it comes from and how to manage it so that it doesn't overwhelm us. Welcome, Dr. Durana.
Thank you. So glad to be here with you.
Well, I'm glad you're here to talk about this. I think that it's very important. What exactly is shame, and where does it come from?
It's a very powerful social emotion. It governs social relationships, really. It is a way that we regulate social behavior in so many ways about what is acceptable, what is unacceptable. And if you look at the definition of shame, one of the aspects of that definition has to do with maybe the lighter aspect of shame, which is, in French and in Spanish, like the word pudor, which is maybe like, a sense of disapproval, and then you correct it in some way or another. But there's another, a deeper aspect of shame that we don't have in the English language, where other languages have a different word for it. And that would be shame as feeling of disgrace, a feeling of dishonor. Someone has done something that then they may feel a sense of disgrace and, dishonoring others. Now, that is an important thing because that is how we regulate, social interactions and behavior. And in fact, sometimes when we think of people, we say that, that person is shameless. And we don't like that, do we? We want to feel like everyone or most people are capable of experiencing and feeling shameful about certain things. Because that can determine whether that person has enough sensitivities to be part of the group or to be part of our society and so on. So all of those are very important functions of shame, right?
Yes.
But there's another aspect of shame that then becomes very problematic, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And that has to do with how that sense of shame becomes like a pervasive habit in a way. The person is almost like shame-bound in some way, so that shame manifests throughout that person's life in many different ways, and it becomes very problematic. Because when we feel that sense of shame in a more pervasive way, what happens is that we're feeling unworthy. We're feeling in some way defective. Something's deeply wrong with us. And as a result, then, we feel not accepted or not acceptable or that we don't belong. So it's that feeling of unworthiness and not belonging that is very, very painful. And it becomes very impactful in our lives, in how we think about ourselves, in how we cope with life, in our relationships, in our behaviors, in our work life. It causes many, many different types of problems, if you will.
So do we all experience that very deep aspect of shame, or are there people who go through life and never have to deal with that?
I think that everybody has had some experience of shame. It's just that sometimes we can, very often, let's say, we cope with it in different ways. We can cover it over. We can compensate. So, for example, if I feel very unworthy, I may become someone who can be very overly productive at work. We're trying to prove something. We're trying to prove that we have value. And as a result, we may become a workaholic. Now, for some people, that could be seen, this person is fantastic. He produces
right.
So much. But then the rest of his life is a mess. So there are ways that we can compensate for that. We can compensate with drugs, alcohol. We can compensate with, being perfectionistic. We can compensate through anger. If that shame button gets pushed, and we can become very angry. I'm thinking of an example of someone that is in a relationship, and this man has had challenges in getting jobs that are really providing enough for the family. And so when these conversations come about where his wife is asking him about it, he becomes very defensive. He becomes very angry. And then he may be attacking his partner. He may withdraw and not want to talk about it. So he feels a great deal of shame. It's very difficult to talk about this because it's really touching something in him, first of all. As a man, you know, then there are some gender-based expectations and norms that have to do with shame. And as a man, of course, first of all, he is not providing. That is one of the biggest norms for men, right? You have to be a good provider. And now all of a sudden he's not doing that. Mm-hmm. So there's big shame about that. And also even sharing his feeling. As a man, it's a weakness to be vulnerable and show feelings. You know, I'm feeling scared, for example.
But he doesn't want to say that.
No, of course not. So his way of coping would be to get angry, to withdraw, and it's not very effective now. So there are other ways then that he needs to learn to work with those feelings and to transform them, so that he can free himself of that shame and become better in his relationship and feel better about himself.
So we can see the results of shame as grown-ups, but do the roots of shame start at a very early age?
Yes, of course they do. And I can think of my shame. There's an aspect of my shame that has to do, for example, with a teacher that I had for several years, and he would be very shaming as a teacher in terms of really putting me down in terms of the product of what I produce, and through was emotionally abusive in some ways, and some of the things that he would say about not being smart and so on. So the school environment can produce a shame. Our home environment, of course, is one of the most important places. Let's say that there's a family where very controlling in many ways, and maybe what's right and it's what the family wants primarily, whether it be in terms of career or in terms of behavior. And if you go away from those norms and what is right, then you can be shamed for that. So the person maybe later on developed a career where maybe it wasn't really what he or she wanted to do, but it was maybe the thing that was the right thing to do. So there can be different family scenarios that can engender that feeling of shame.
Why is the emotion of shame something that is so deeply felt? Why is it so painful to us?
It really goes to the core, because as human beings, we have a need to feel loved, to feel respected, to feel valuable, and to feel like we belong, that we are part of our family, of our society, and so on. Okay? So they're fundamental needs. And if those needs are not addressed as human beings, there are results, negative results, because of that. That really is something we can think of as biological.
So let's go back to biology and our families. We sometimes say that our family or individuals guilt us into something. Is there a difference between guilt and shame?
Yes, there is. We can think of shame, let's say, I am a bad person, would be the belief that the person would have, as opposed to, say, guilt, I did something bad today. So that's very specific, and we can feel guilty about doing that. Maybe as a kid, I hurt my sister, let's say, and certainly guilt is useful because I can feel bad about that, and then I can take corrective measures and make amends and try to change that. Where if I think I am fundamentally bad or wrong, okay, I'm thinking about myself as one of my own shame core beliefs, it's hard to change that. You see, it's hard to have a way out of that. If I have that label on myself across my forehead, it's difficult to have a way out of that. If that's who I am, as opposed to this is what I'm doing, I did something wrong. See, that difference is huge. And one of the things of working with shame is, you want to go from the I am to what I did that may be wrong. Let's go back when I'm talking about having this thing on your forehead imprinted like a label. One of the definitions of shame is also, it's a cover. And I know that in my own experience of shame, my own shame, it is like that. It's like a cover, like a shroud, as if you are covered with something filthy, something stained, something yuck. That is the sort of the felt sense of shame. And that's what that labeling, that deep self-labeling does, is that kind of a feeling. And the body language that often goes with that, in the lighter kind of shame, we may get, our cheeks will get red and we might pull away and so on. But in this type of shame, you know, it's like having that shroud over us. I mean, the head may go down, our chest may collapse. Our body language reflects that in a much deeper and profound way.
So you're saying, what I hear you saying, is that there's a difference. There perhaps are different levels of shame. There might be the shame of the way someone thinks he or she looks. That might be one level, but there could be another level. Perhaps there was some abuse that went on.
Right.
And that would be a deeper level.
Exactly. Then there are other things that go with that, with the abuse, depending, you know, physical or sexual abuse. Often there are certain common things that occur with that, a much deeper sense of disgust and self-hatred, and that often comes with that. And then the deeper kind of negative beliefs, you know, I am damaged, or I am so unworthy, I'm so disgusting. Or sometimes in physical abuse, you can feel very hopeless about standing up for yourself. I can't speak up. I'm not allowed. I don't have the right to defend myself. I don't have the right to speak up. I don't have the right to protect myself because there's something so fundamentally wrong with me because of what has happened. Because for much of with abuse, often what happens is there's a very deep level of self-blame that occurs.
You know, when we first started talking about shame, we were kind of laughing and smiling a little bit at some of the things that are more like guilt. But it seems like this is a very, very negative emotion. Is it always a negative emotion?
Well, again, as I was saying earlier, I think there's some value to the social function of shame. But when we're talking about what we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes or so, this aspect of shame, then it's very negative. It's very painful and has many, many ramifications, physically, mentally, emotionally, in terms of our energy, in terms of our creativity, in terms of our mood, in so many different ways.
I'm wondering if blame always accompanies feelings of shame. Can you talk about that?
Well, sometimes we can be blamed for certain things, and then we can absorb that blame. I said, yeah, there's something wrong. Again, it's not just guilt, something wrong that I did, but there's something fundamentally wrong with me for having done that. And blame can come with that, can be a vehicle.
And yeah. We can blame ourselves.
Yeah, then that's the worst part. Then we start to, and as children, we don't know any better. So we can't understand or have enough of a capacity to see, well, there's something wrong with my parent for doing that, or sibling or teacher. You know, we think, oh, there's something really, I am the cause of it. There's something deeply wrong in my being. And that is the problem with shame there.
So then you would say that shame can affect our self-esteem.
Yeah, it's shame and unworthiness and low self-esteem go hand in hand. Although sometimes we can vacillate. We can go to very low self-esteem, and then we can go to very, you know, almost like a sense of arrogance. But that really becomes a compensation for
right.
that unworthiness.
Can we affect others when we feel this way, like our children, other loved ones?
Yeah, because even with our kids, sometimes, for example, let's say as a parent, let's say that you become exasperated with your child. You cannot control their behavior. You don't know what to do. And at that moment, you feel helpless. Now, that can lead to, feelings of shame. I should know what to do here, and I'm feeling helpless and so on. And I'm not supposed to. You see, shame is bound to a lot of expectations and assumptions that we might have about being perfect or about always being in charge or always being in control or always being certain way or another.
Or seeing some other family. They have it together.
They have it together and I don't. And something's fundamentally wrong with me. I should have it together. And then I may react and do something with my child. I may spank the child. I may scream at the child. You know, what's wrong with you? And in a way, I'm passing it down when I do that.
Exactly.
See, what that statement, what is wrong with you?
I mean, you know? There's shame right there.
Yeah. Right. It's right at the being, you know, of the person, of the child.
I know you talked about this a little bit earlier, but what can you talk again about what people do in order to stop the feelings of shame?
Well, I think that let's think in terms of maybe some steps that we can take in dealing with shame. And I think of it maybe how can we transform? How can we heal shame? Because sometimes what we are doing is trying to suppress the shame. Like they say, this parent who's having a trouble dealing with a child, or the husband who's having a lot of difficulty in dealing with the whole job situation and all of that. And they're suppressing the feeling of shame. They feel awful.
Yes.
They feel incompetent. They feel defective. They feel unworthy and so on. And so whenever we're trying to change something, you have to bring light to it. We have to become aware of it. It's like know thyself, you know?
Yes.
That is the first step. And it takes courage to do that, to start that process. And often we don't get to that place until we have suffered enough. Maybe there's a problem, maybe the relationship, or we're acting out too much with our kid and somebody starts to complain, or our spouse, or there's, you know, often we wait until there is a problem when we're suffering enough so that we say, okay, we got to get help here.
Right.
And so that can propel us to really look at ourselves, to try to understand what's happening with this, to try to not deny it, to bring light to it, and to begin with some degree of acceptance that is there. And rather than suppressing it, try to understand it, try to experience it. And that is painful. But at the same time, that painfulness, when we start to work with it, can lead us. These painful memories are, in a sense, part of us. When we connect with our pain in a constructive way, there's a sweetness to that sometimes, because it connects us to who we really are, a deeper aspect of our being, where there is a certain degree of worthiness, lovableness, way in there. We can tap into that in that process over time of accepting it.
In this podcast, that sounds very simple and very easy. But what if there have been years and years of abuse, and there are layers and layers of shame to get through? Where
right,
does somebody
right.
start?
Yeah, well, this is what I'm talking about is maybe some steps where we can follow. And this is one step. And I'm not saying something that all of a sudden, you know, you do this one time.
Oh, I know that's not what you're
this
saying.
This is something that takes time. So what are some of the other steps? Because as I was saying, this is not something that you do overnight and one shot kind of a deal. A second aspect of the healing is having a community, or having, whether it be a therapist or friends or a group, or, you know, a combination of things. Like, for example, people who are in AA or NA, there's a community there, and where people accept each other despite their awful things that have been done, right?
Yes.
Likewise, if you have a good friend, a minister, a priest, a therapist, it's important to share our stories with shame, because part of shame is hiding from others. So part of the healing process is being able to share the stories with others. When we experience that kind of empathy and compassion from somebody else, that is very healing. They're joining us in that experience in a way. They're understanding us and maybe validating us. But at the same time, they're not trying to fix it. They can't fix it. They're there with you, and they're witnessing that in a compassionate way.
And sometimes when you feel that empathy from others, it helps you to be more accepting of yourself.
Exactly. It touches that place in you that I was talking about. It helps you touch that place. You feel the support that you need to help you go to that place. Because sometimes it's really hard to get to that acceptance place on your own, you know?
Right.
Or you might do it some, but then you need this other influence from the outside.
Because you give yourself all of that self-talk.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need something from the outside to break through that.
Yeah, definitely. It's very important. Extremely important. And also because the aspect of shame that has to do with feeling isolated, alienated, not belonging, unworthy to the point where you don't feel like you're a part of a family or community. So that is another aspect that is extremely important. Another important function is the, you know, you want to understand what triggers it, whether it be certain thoughts, whether it be certain interactions. So you become more aware of how it works, what triggers it, and so on.
Dr. Durana, you and I had been talking earlier about triggers. In couples therapy, how do you see shame being triggered?
Well, I was using the example earlier about that couple and how he goes into shame around not having a job that he can maintain and so on, and how that triggers it for him. It's important in coaching the partner, and how do we bring up conversations about this? Because, you know, sometimes, let's face it, we can judge each other and blame each other and so on. And so when you're working with a couple, you have to pay attention to the interactions and how do you teach them to talk about this problem in a way that is constructive.
Sure.
Another aspect that's so important about this with the triggers is also the expectations, the assumptions. Like I was talking about earlier about gender-based things and the expectations there are different in the norms for males and females. And so some of the triggers can be gender-based. And, you know, it's good to be aware of that and to be aware, you know, of these assumptions.
Are there other aspects or issues that come up when you're dealing with people around shame?
Yeah, I was talking about a sort of like a prescription almost, you know, some things that are important. And there are other things that can be helpful to pay attention to. The practice of mindfulness. And I know one of our other podcasts, I talked about the use of mindfulness as a therapeutic approach that can be helpful. And, you know, to be able to stand back and witness with compassion our feelings and our thoughts. It can give us a broader perspective. There's also what could be referred to as critical mindfulness, in a sense, is almost like our rational thinking that can help us put things in place. Like, for example, the whole moving from shame to guilt, when I was talking about earlier, you know,
mm-hmm.
I am bad versus I did something wrong. There's a certain faculty in us that we have in terms of discerning and evaluating that's very important in doing that, moving from one to the other, which is very important to do. And likewise, that faculty we can use for dealing with many aspects of shame and the components of them. Our worthiness, our lovability, and so on.
When we use those rational tactics or techniques, would you say that we're having compassion towards ourselves when we use them?
We can, if we try to elicit that compassion. So it's not just cold rationality, although even that can be helpful at times. But it's even more effective if we can bring in some degree of compassion into that evaluation.
How do we do that?
Well, I'll give you an example. Let's say this person that I'm seeing, who he's saying, I'm a bad person. And so I said, well, what constitutes a good person? And so we come up with some criteria. What's a good person? We list them. Then, now, I know he's a teacher. He teaches children. And I'd start to ask him, what do you do with the children? Give me an idea of what happens. What do you do with the kids? And so he starts to describe some activities. And then I say, well, when you're doing that, you know, he's taking the time to be kind and caring, trying to teach one of those kids how to learn something.
Right.
I say, well, that's a very important thing that you're doing there with them, isn't it? I mean, you're having compassion, you're being caring. That was one of your definitions of being a good person, isn't it? They go, yeah. And then we go through some other things like that. And basically, he's manifesting a lot of those qualities that he described as a good person every day in his work environment. But he sees himself as a bad person. And then you ask, well, you know, would you be, if one of those kids was doing all of those things that you're doing, would you say that kid was a bad person? No, of course not. He says, no, not at all. So this is a way of starting to reflect and look at the biases that we have against ourselves. Like it's kind of a double standard, you know?
Yes, yes.
And so there are ways of doing that where we can bring in some of that analysis, if you will, or that evaluation, but trying to bring in some compassion in the process.
So a client can take that, you've given them these tools, and they can take that away from your session, away from your office, at home, and they can be aware of their self-talk and retrain themselves.
Exactly. Great point, because a lot of this is about the self-talk as well. is one aspect that we have to deal with. And how do we catch that? And how do we train ourselves to use different techniques like that to deal with it? Of course, in dealing with shame, we also need to learn to feel more positive feelings as well. So that's another aspect of, in terms of coping skills. Another thing that's very important is paying attention to our body and our posture. I will work with that sometimes. It's almost like a role play and or acting kind of way. Because with shame, there's, you know, we are in that state that is expressed in our bodies. We may bring the head down. We may, you know, it's kind of like that shroud I was talking about earlier. The shoulders may come forward, hunching a bit. Or we may pull away with our body in some way rather than being present. So it's how, what is our physical sense of presence as we're talking? How is that manifesting? Okay?
Yes.
So we can use the body that way as a feedback mechanism in dealing with shame as well.
So there are a lot of positive ways to treat this negative emotion.
And then the person can become more aware, like with the example with the posture, and maybe start catching him or herself when they're out there at times and self-correcting, because that will then give feedback to our brain and to create a more positive state or make a shift in our self-perception at that moment. So it's another way of helping the process of change.
Helping us to accept ourselves.
As well.
Dr. Durana, I want to thank you for delving into this topic that has so many different layers.
I am so glad to have had an opportunity to talk with you about this, because this is so important. It has been for me in my life, in dealing with my own shame, and I hope that it can be helpful to others.
If someone wants to get in touch with you, they can call you or they can visit your website to learn more about your approaches. There are so many people who are dealing with shame. I think they would like to talk with you and perhaps work with you on a deeper basis. So you can reach Dr. Durana at 703-408-4965, or you can visit his website, www.caringapproach.com. Thank you, Dr. Durana.
Well, they know how to reach me now. Thank you.